If you'd like to pick up, this is the copy of Luke's Gospel. It should be on your chair, and turn to page 44. I'm going to read for us. It's page 44, and it's the paragraph entitled The Parable of the Rich Fool. I'm going to read from verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of one's possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things that you have prepared, whose will they be?' So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God."
Thanks, Phil, and thank you for coming. It's great to welcome you among us here at Euston Church. If you're visiting with us, thank you for coming out of the park on a sunny afternoon to think about this important question. Mark Zuckerberg, there he is. I think we've got a picture of him up here. There he is. That's one of the nicer things that people say about him on Facebook. I think we're all jealous. Did you know that he's worth $35.1 billion? And yet apparently he wears exactly the same old grey t-shirt to work every single day. And they say he's got more than one of them. It looks like it's worth about a pound. So there you go, $35 billion. Of the grey t-shirts if you wanted them. The next guy on the next picture, this is the Russian Zuckerberg. His name is Pavel Durov, and he got into trouble here. What he's doing from his office window, he was throwing out paper aeroplane £100 notes, effectively £100 in paper aeroplane shape, and the reason that he got into trouble for that was because he basically started a riot on the streets of St. Petersburg when the locals realized what it was he was chucking out the window. That's him. Here's another Mark Zuckerberg. This is the feline Mark Zuckerberg. This is Blackie the cat. He's worth $25 million. His owners left him everything and nothing to the rest of the relatives. A true fat cat, you might say. I guess the other relatives have ruder words that they call him. That's Blackie. Thanks, guys. Well, even in days of austerity, I think it's fair to say that lots of us are fascinated by people of wealth. Maybe we admire them even more now that they managed to come through the financial crisis unscathed. Question is God very impressed with any of them? We're diving in here in the middle of Luke's Gospel, in the middle of a sermon. Actually, that's what Phil read for us, part of a sermon by Jesus. I hope you keep it open because we're going to refer to it over the next few minutes. Jesus is the greatest preacher the world has ever known. It's amazing, actually, 2,000 years later, how undisputed that claim is, as his teaching still echoes and reverberates around our world. We're told at the start of this chapter, literally thousands, you'd have needed a football stadium for the people who were clamoring to hear him. And he's been talking about some of the biggest ideas in the whole of life. At the top of the page, we didn't read, but Jesus was talking about things like forgiveness, and a day when everybody will meet God. Even on the previous page, the controversial word hell came off the lips of Jesus during this sermon. Huge ideas, really difficult ever to engage your brain with. And in sentence 13, it seems that Jesus has paused for breath. Maybe this was the point when they sent the question that slips round. It seems like there was the opportunity just to stick your hand up. Anyone got a question for the teacher? Ah, gentleman over here with his hand up. Verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." This guy seems to think this is an episode of Judge Judy, if you've ever seen that show. "This is all very interesting, Jesus, but I've got a wife and kids and bills to pay. So tell my annoying brother to give me my share." It's the kind of disagreement that happens in family life, sadly. Maybe you've experienced this kind of thing. Conflict over money and inheritances and wills. Do you know the old saying? Where there's a will, there's a family. Well, this is the real world and normal life. Never mind Judgment Day, Jesus. Which one of us is going to get to keep Granny's antique piano? That's what we're interested in. And I think it's understandable. If your brother is trying to do you over in this sort of way, of course the guy should be annoyed. And yet, it feels so mundane, so irrelevant, really, in the context of the things that Jesus has been teaching. So imagine one of you puts in a question. At the end, you write it down on the slip. "Thanks for the talk, Kev, but actually my boiler burst this morning. Could you recommend a good plumber?" Now, you can ask any question you want. And I can actually recommend a good plumber. There's a bloke called Darren up on the Caledonian Road who could really sort you out. But that kind of question just feels a little bit left field in the context of the things we're discussing, if you get what I mean. This man's question is of that nature. And I think it just demonstrates the big problem that Jesus has in his communication. See, he wants to talk about God and forgiveness and the future. But Jesus speaks into a world that is obsessed with now and comfort and stuff. We live in a city that's an extreme of that worldview. We are bombarded every day in London with messages about now and comfort and stuff. And I take it that that will make us very difficult people for Jesus to get through to. But my hope and prayer is that as we listen to the great teacher for a few minutes, that he will be able to lift our sights from the urgent to the important, from the now to the eternal. It's a big ask. Even for Jesus, maybe too big an ask for some of us. See, Jesus will only be able to start to get through to us if he can persuade us to ditch our obsession with material things. And if you like handouts, if you feel the comfort of them, if you've got one beside you there, we're in our first point, this sobering story that Jesus tells. It's a story that begins innocently and nicely enough. Sentence 16. And he told them a parable saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully, and he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.'" These are the kind of middle class rich people's problems. That I read about in the Islington paper around our area, where there was great complaint that the nearest supermarket was a Marks and Spencer's and no Waitrose as far as the eye could see. I think that's what you call a middle class problem in North London. Well, this man has kind of rich people's problems. Business is going so well. What am I supposed to do with all this excess stuff that I find myself to be producing? Maybe his story was partly luck. But it sounds like quite a lot of initiative and planning had gone in this case. And if you look at verse 18, you can see there he is planning again, planning for his retirement this time, aged 40 or whatever he is. The reason I say he's a kind of Mark Zuckerberg is because he must be young enough to expect that he has many years, he says, verse 18, left to enjoy all of this stuff. Mark Zuckerberg is 31 years of age. There you go, 35 billion at 31, £1 billion and more for every year that he has lived so far. And that is really the trick, the dream, isn't it, that everyone is trying to pull off? I mean, what is the point of making a fortune, but then being so old and exhausted that you have to be wheeled straight to the retirement village? Now, make your money when you're young enough that you'll be able to actually enjoy it. So picture our young billionaire in sentence 19. Can you see him sitting on the veranda of his Tuscan villa? It's just one of the many homes that he owns. And it's a beautiful evening as the sun sets over the rolling Tuscan hills. Now, he owns all the land around as far as the eye can see. Nearest neighbour's house is 5 miles that way. It's chill out time by the pool for the rest of his life. Wouldn't you love to be able to say what he says in sentence 19? Sentence 19. And I will say to my soul, so you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. Imagine your only worry in life is, ooh, where are we going to go on the next holiday? And, ooh, shall we take the private jet or shall we fly first class this time? Decisions, decisions. What bottle of wine should we have for dinner? Should we go to that party this evening or shall we just make it a chill out in the jacuzzi with a beer this evening? Oh, no, let's go to the party. I mean, YOLO, as the young people say. Perhaps he was chilling out in the hot tub when it happened. We're not told the details. Was it a pain in his chest? His head, maybe? Or did he just quick slip away quietly in his bed? We don't know the details, but what we know is that before the night was out, just like that, rich boy is dead. Of course, the funeral was a huge media event. Even the Prime Minister tweeted his condolences to one of the country's finest young entrepreneurs. His innovations will shape the industry for generations. He lived to the max. Were those the eulogies? Jesus only mentions one obituary to rich boy. It's God's. Did you see it in verse 20? Just a one word eulogy. Fool. Which is not to say that rich boy was stupid. His financial acumen was never in doubt. Nor is this God's rant or God's revenge on the fat cats. God has no particular prejudice for or against you if you're wealthy. Verse 21 was the problem. He laid up treasure for himself, but wasn't rich toward God. And you can see that as you just even look back over the detail of that short story, how little God featured in this man's thinking. What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. I will do this. He's even having that little conversation with himself. Who better to talk to when you want some sensible chat? God? Oh, who needs God when you're so self-sufficient? We don't have recorded the conversation between rich boy and God the night his soul was required of him. Did he try to do a deal? He was really good at doing deals. God, I've got all this grain in my barns. I mean, I can help you, God. Can we come to some sort of arrangement? The thing he didn't realize was that God owns every field and cow and planet in the universe. Do you really think he was going to be intimidated by the size of your property portfolio? Or that somehow God could be bought off with the right number of zeros at the end of a check? How irrelevant. You know, to be honest, I was actually starting to get into describing the hot tub and the Tuscan villa, and that is a scene that I could dwell on and try and describe for quite a big chunk of a talk, I think, if you let me. Were you slightly jealous of him as well, as you heard his words in verse 19? Well, pity this man, is Jesus' point. Have you ever thought what you want them to write on your tombstone? It's an interview question you sometimes get asked in graduate jobs. You should prepare your answer, make it something clever. Just one word for this man's tombstone as far as God is concerned. Fool. Here lies a fool. Now we'll move on to our second point, because it's very heavy stuff, isn't it, to think about. And Jesus doesn't tell these hard, heavy stories for no reason. This is a story with teeth for a purpose. Verse 15 is the purpose. And he said to them, take care and be on your guard. Take care and be on your guard. Jesus speaks in love, always. He never tells a story like this out of cruelty or just the desire to frighten people for no good reason. Take care is Jesus' point. You know, there's a road in the north of England. It's on the deepest, darkest, foggiest road in the north of England. It's called the A66. I've only driven on it once, and it was a foggy, cold December evening on my own, which was scary enough. It was starting to freeze over, which was scary as well. Just being in the north of England was quite scary in and of itself. But the thing that really got the fear going in me that evening was the road signs that I came across every few miles. 70 people killed on this road in the last 10 years. Nice, isn't it? Welcome to the A66. And that is pretty scary. It certainly got the fear into me that night, but I take it that the aim was not to be cruel to me. That sign was designed to alert me to the fact that I could be the next statistic. So, take care. And it's that kind of helpful, loving warning that Jesus is trying to deliver with his story. Verse 15 again, I'll read the whole verse this time. And he said to them, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of one's possessions. So who is this a story for? Well, if you are the social media billionaire, welcome to Euston Church. But there's more to life than the number of zeros after your name, says Jesus. But actually, remember, this isn't mainly a story to be used to whack the fat cats. Do you remember who asked the question in the first place? Just this ordinary bloke who was having this problem with the money his brother owed him. So if that's you, in a family feud over money, Jesus says you have something more important to sort out. There's a day when you're going to meet God. Actually, verse 15, he said to them. Jesus has a broader audience in view here. And by verse 20, 2, just after our reading, he's speaking to the disciples. So if you're a follower of Jesus, if you're just an ordinary member of the crowd, whoever you are, this is his warning to us in love. And I guess it's fair to say is that most of us don't envy the billionaires because we actually want to appear in the Sunday Times rich list. Maybe you do. But when we think of Zuckerberg's 35.1 billion, do you know what I think about? Just the 0.1. Just give me that 0.1 and that would sort out quite a few things. Or Blackie the cat with his I mean, how expensive and good can cat food actually be? Just give me a little bit of his inheritance. Because we envy the security that money brings, don't we? And we want to be clever with our cash. Have you noticed how good people are at telling you what a bargain and what a good deal they've managed to achieve? So our neighbour over on this side told us the other day their property has gone up 70% in value in the last 5 years. And this neighbour over here is always telling me how good a deal she has on her rent. Now, I want a property that's gone up that much in value, and I want that good a deal on the rent, partly just so that I can have the conversation with the neighbours, keep up with them. We live in a world that encourages us to chase material things. And Jesus says to me, as he says to you, Kev, whoever you are, there's way more to life than the security you get from stuff. I'm trying to talk to you about eternity, says Jesus, and the security that you need with God when you meet him. We don't tend to think about that day very much, do we? I guess because most of us are relatively young and healthy. Jesus says YOLO isn't true. He says you have a soul that will last forever. So please, I hope you don't mind me asking you, what are you living for? Is what you're living for death proof? Or will death make a mockery of it all? D.L. Moody was an American preacher in the 1800s. He said this: our greatest fear should not be of failure, but of succeeding at something that doesn't really matter. And I guess the tragedy of this story Jesus told is greater because Rich Boy seemed so successful, but actually he was just on the same dangerous road as millions of Londoners. Jesus doesn't want you to be a fool. And that's why, for our final couple of minutes, we'll just begin to unpack the better way that Jesus would have us be rich toward God, is his summary. It's what the rich man wasn't. And it is this attitude that, if you want to put it in the language of Facebook, would make Jesus click the like icon. Jesus likes it when people are rich toward God. And I think lots of people realise, don't they, that there's more to life than the abundance of your possessions. I've just started reading a book called The Road to Character. It was reviewed in The Guardian just recently. And it's basically saying there's more to your life than, if you like, the crude facts that are written on your CV. The real legacy that matters is what kind of person were you? I think guys like Zuckerberg seem to get that to some extent, because as well as being Mr. Megabucks, he's also quite a philanthropist, as is Bill Gates and many other wealthy individuals. Now, we shouldn't automatically despise the wealthy. Some of them really think carefully about how to use their money in good ways. But the problem is, whatever you give your life to, if it revolves around you and your achievements, no matter how noble those achievements may be, if God is not in the picture, Jesus says you've got life wrong. I wonder, how will that conversation go? Do you ever think about it? the conversation on the day you meet him. Be rich toward God, says Jesus. And I'm aware, even as I say that, it sounds like what you'd expect to hear in church, doesn't it? It's going to be an appeal for money. I mean, people have a lot to criticize about churches, but the one thing everyone agrees churches are really good at, they never forget it, any Sunday, they always ask you for money at some point in the meeting. But it's really interesting when you read on here, because the next paragraph, the one that starts, don't be anxious, as it unpacks the implications of what it means to be rich toward God, it's not mainly about actually getting your wallet out and giving God a £10 tip at the end of the service. Rich toward God begins with things he wants to do for you. So first, he wants to be your father. He wants to be the great provider in your life, the kind of provider the rich man didn't think he needed. Verse 27 mentions lilies. I brought a lily along with me. Phil's going to give it. Thanks, Phil. I bought these for my wife earlier this week. She was a little bit annoyed about me yanking one of them out of the rest to bring tonight. I think she'll be more annoyed when she discovers that the main reason I bought her them was for the purposes of this illustration. But she's not in the room, so you don't have to tell her about that. Jesus mentions the lilies in verse 27. This one's starting to look slightly ragged from having spent some time today in that Sainsbury's bag. But the point is, if God can dress that so brilliantly, and it doesn't need to worry about mortgages or anything else, do you think he might be able to sort out a shirt and some jeans for you to be arrayed in to wear? See, God wants to liberate you from all this anxiety of being self-made. He wants to give you himself. It's one of the most precious blessings in the Christian life, a father in heaven who sees all your needs and who you can trust to provide. See, the biggest thing he wants to provide for you is a future. Verse 32 says he wants to give you the kingdom. That's old-fashioned language for paradise, basically. Read the early chapters of Luke's Gospel. Love you to take that away with you. It's yours. And what you see in those chapters is a taste of paradise in the ministry of Jesus, as he heals every disease, reverses death, banishes evil. That's what his kingdom will be like in the future. His own resurrection at the end of Luke's Gospel is the foretaste, the ultimate proof, if you like, that that future beyond death is real. See, you could never buy a place or earn it there. Jesus' death buys it for you. But it is not automatic. He says to you, come to me and let me help you into things that have eternal value. That raises a load of questions, doesn't it? I hope you'll ask them questions about how Jesus' work achieves this for us. How can you really be freed from anxieties when you live in the real world? Get real. Maybe that's your question. What does it mean to seek his fit kingdom first? As it says in that next paragraph. Ask whatever questions you want to ask. But rich toward God basically means organizing your life around a better provider than yourself and a bigger future than just the next 60 years. It's very hard to hear Jesus on this, isn't it, in the world that we live in? Our man with his hand up at the start, grumpy at his brother, is he still listening at this point? Or has he zoned out by now? Have we zoned out by now? I think if he's still listening, he'd be quite interested in sentence 33 at the top of the next page. See, even if you get all your brother's money and all of Blackie the Cat's money, and even if inflation or the internet fraudsters don't eat it all away, you'll be dead soon. Verse 33, Jesus talks about treasure in the heavens that doesn't fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. That's the riches Christians have that Cranston was speaking about. Does it interest you at all? As I say, it's big, heavy stuff to think about, isn't it? On a sunny Sunday afternoon. Are you giving attention to your Father and to your future? Our greatest fear should not be of failure, but of succeeding at something that doesn't really matter. The message to the social media billionaires from Jesus adds the same message to us, spoken in love. Will you take care? Will you make sure you don't get life wrong? Will you let me give you a father and a future that have value beyond imagining? Thanks for listening.